Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. This Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcast at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast or a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from Spanish National Radio, NHK World Radio Japan, Russia's Sputnik Radio, and Radio Havana Cuba. We'll begin with Spanish National Radio, also known as Radio Exterior de España. Allison Hughes reports on the export credit agencies, which allow countries to invest and promote oil, gas, and coal development without oversight. Through ECAs, billions of dollars are poured into the fossil fuel industry despite the Paris Agreement of 2015 and the increasing dangers caused by global warming. Taxpayers in industrialized countries are unwittingly paying for this rather than the development of renewable energy. Spanish National Radio.
The most prestigious climate scientists in the world form part of the United Nations ICPP, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Changes. They have produced the periodic reports containing the latest findings on which global policy may be developed. As a result of its latest assessments, the ICPP says carbon emissions must decline 7.6% each year between now and 2030 in order to put the world on track to meet the 1.5 degree centigrade temperature rise cap called for under the Paris Climate Agreement. Scientific reports have shown the damages already occurring and the risks to animal and plant life and human civilization should temperatures rise above the 1.5 degree cap. Environmentalist groups have long denounced the various forms of financial support for the industries most responsible for the CO2 emissions that have provoked global warming and the concurrent extreme weather events. In some cases, that financial support actually comes out of public funds, monies gathered by governments from their citizens and residents, as we'll report. Export credit agencies are government-backed financial institutions that are currently handing out more than $31 billion a year to the oil, gas, and coal industries. According to the decree of government sponsorship, export credit agencies provide public funds to importers and are thus decried as hidden subsidies or corporate welfare. They also work as insurance for companies to protect their financial investment or expected profits from any political action that may be taken to protect workers' rights and safety, human rights, or the environment in the countries where the investment is being made. Through these ECAs, the governments of the G20 most industrialized nations are currently spending nearly 12 times more on fossil fuels than on renewable energy sources. Since the signing of the landmark Paris Accord in 2015, which enjoins countries to slash carbon emissions, G20 countries have given $7.1 billion a year to finance the coal industry by means of the export credit agencies. Kate DeAngelis, a senior international policy analyst at Friends of the Earth U.S., said, "While the world is racing to stop the worst of the climate crisis, export credit agencies are pouring billions of dollars into fossil fuel projects. Three of the worst offenders, Japan, Korea, and Canada, talk a lot about bold climate action while helping to prop up some of the world's dirtiest energy projects. Japan's ECAs continue to support new coal projects. Canada's ECA is pouring money into the tar sands, and many ECAs are jumping at the chance to support LNG, liquefied natural gas, in northern Mozambique and elsewhere." Browen Tucker, a research analyst at Oil Change International, said, It's reckless and reprehensible for any government to still be providing billions in public finance for oil, gas, and coal. It's even more concerning for these fossil fuel handouts to be coming from G20 nations, many of which are the most historically responsible for the climate crisis. Tucker told AFP, ECAs are something almost no one has heard of, but as public finance institutions, they help governments pursue trade strategies in individual countries are able to shroud their investments around them. These government handouts to the fossil fuel industry completely disregard the Paris Agreement on climate change, the mounting urgency of the climate crisis, and the burgeoning public support for bold action on climate change. It was not so long ago that climate activist 16-year-old Greta Thunberg told participants at the 50th World Economic Forum at Davos.
In the days running up to the 50th anniversary of the World Economic Forum, I joined a group of climate activists demanding that you, the world's most powerful and influential business and political leaders, begin to take the action needed. We demand at this year's World Economic Forum participants from all companies, banks, institutions and governments immediately halt all investments in fossil fuel exploration and extraction, immediately end all fossil fuel subsidies, and immediately and completely divest from fossil fuels. We don't want these things done by 2050, 2030, or even 2021. We want this done now. It may seem like we are asking for a lot, and you will, of course, say that we are naive. But this is just the very minimum amount of effort that is needed to start the rapid sustainable transition. So either you do this, or you're going to have to explain to your children why you are giving up on the 1.5 degree target, giving up without even trying.
And that was before it was revealed that these government-backed financial agencies were throwing $31 billion into fossil fuels each year, without being counted into their so-called carbon footprint.
That report by Allison Hughes was from Radio Exterior de España, or Spanish National Radio. Spain may be heard at their website, rtve.es, and by podcast as REE. I highly recommend that you listen to the entire program that this piece was excerpted from. Next, NHK World Radio Japan. The European Union's foreign policy chief has apologized for criticizing young climate change protesters. Record-breaking high temperatures were observed in Antarctica this week. The United Nations has expressed concern over the upsurge of desert locusts in eastern Africa, which are destroying essential food crops. U.S. military aircraft flew close to Taiwan to keep pressure on China. NHK Japan.
The EU's top diplomat has apologized after being widely criticized for calling young climate protesters as suffering from Greta syndrome, in reference to young Swedish activist Greta Thunberg. EU foreign policy chief Josep Borrell tweeted Saturday, "I want to apologize to anyone that may have felt offended by my inappropriate reference to the important youth movement fighting climate change." Borrell's tweet came after he made the remarks on Wednesday at a European Parliament event in the Belgian capital, Brussels. He reportedly said he doubted whether young people demonstrating against climate change are aware of those measures' costs and willing to reduce their living standards for them. As his remarks spread through social media, many criticized him, saying his attitude was shameful and he was not worthy of representing the EU. In December, the EU pledged to tackle climate change with a goal of making the Union climate neutral by 2050. But its members remain divided on the issue.
The UN Weather Agency says a record high temperature of 18.3 degrees Celsius was logged in Antarctica, fueling concerns over rising sea levels. The World Meteorological Organization says the new record was observed on the northern tip of the Antarctic Peninsula last Thursday. The previous high was 17.5 degrees, marked in 2015. The annual average Antarctic temperature ranges from minus 10 degrees in coastal regions to minus 60 degrees in inland areas. WMO officials say the Antarctic Peninsula, which is close to South America, is one of the fastest warming regions in the world. Its average temperature has risen about 3 degrees in the last 50 years. They say that some 87% of glaciers along the peninsula's west coast have retreated during this period. The melting has reportedly accelerated in the past 12 years. The officials say the continent's ice sheet is 4.8 kilometers thick and contains 90% of the world's fresh water. If it should melt, it would raise the sea level by some 60 meters.
The United Nations has expressed serious concern over the upsurge of desert locust in eastern Africa. The international body warns the delay to fight the migratory pest could lead to devastating damage to agricultural products and bring about a humanitarian crisis in the region. The UN Food and Agriculture Organization reported that the upsurge since last month presents unprecedented threats in Ethiopia, Kenya, and Somalia. UN Undersecretary General and Emergency Relief Coordinator Mark Lowcock told ambassadors during a briefing on Monday that 13 million people in the three countries face serious food shortage. In the hardest-hit nation of Kenya, 100 to 200 billion locusts invaded about 2,400 square kilometers of farmland, which produces food for 84 million people. The UN plans to provide food and pesticide to the region as emergency aid.
Three U.S. military aircraft have flown close to Taiwan in an apparent move aimed at keeping Beijing in check as it continues military pressure on the island. Taiwan's Ministry of National Defense says a U.S. MC-130 special mission aircraft flew north to south along the Taiwan Strait on Wednesday, and two U.S. B-52 bombers skirted Taiwan's east coast, also heading north to south. The flyovers come after Chinese bombers and other aircraft flew near Taiwan on Sunday and Monday. Taiwan says some of the planes briefly crossed the median line in the Taiwan Strait and entered Taiwan's airspace. The administration of U.S. President Donald Trump is deepening ties with Taiwan after Taiwanese President Tsai Ing-wen, who's taken a firm stance toward Beijing, won re-election in January.
Those reports were from NHK World Radio Japan, heard from 9 to 9:30 p.m. at 6155-7410 or 9860, or on the web at www.nhk.or.jp. All the times I announce are for Pacific Standard Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. On to Sputnik Radio, the current name for the Voice of Russia. On his program called Going Underground, host Afshin Ratansi spoke with ex-Israeli diplomat Daniel Levy about Trump's so-called deal of the century. He discusses why the peace plan is doomed to fail, why it reflects Israeli propaganda, what the deal would mean for Palestinians, and why he calls it a 180-page hate letter from America. Sputnik Radio.
So the international community's rejection of Donald Trump's so-called deal of the century, while Israel continues to aerially bombard Gaza. Joining me now is President of the U.S. Middle East Project, who was involved in Bill Clinton negotiations at Camp David, Daniel Levy. Thanks so much for coming on. So Israel bombing Gaza, as I said, the PA cutting all ties with Israel, international community not celebrating it. What was your take?
Well, I think we've had the Arab League formally come out, the EU formally come out. But this was a very curious document, because the headline is Vision for Peace. You then dip into the text, and this is an exclusive one-sided narrative of one side in a conflict, which manages to hit every Israeli propagandist talking point for generations and rub the Palestinian noses in it to an extent that even in a document of surrender, you wouldn't have that kind of imbalance. So it's anything but a peace plan. There are no asks whatsoever from the Israeli side, and the Palestinians literally are being told, live as second-class citizens without a state. Some of the headlines have done an injustice to what is going on in this plan, how bad it is. Some of them said, oh, the Palestinians are getting a little less land. Maybe they're getting not quite the exact neighborhoods in Jerusalem. The Palestinians are getting so little that this looks more like a 180-page hate letter from America to the Palestinians than anything that could possibly be peace. And I'm telling you, as someone who used to negotiate possible texts for a peace plan, this is like copy, paste, and put through a hate grinder. I was involved in negotiations for part of the Oslo agreements. We were part of a back team as an Israeli official at the time for Camp David. We were at the Taba negotiations. I took part in those several months later. What Jared Kushner has done has taken what was anyway a distance that still existed between the parties. That distance existed at Camp David, at every subsequent negotiation.
Right of return famously wasn't in the Oslo, well, of course.
The right of return wasn't there, and there were going to, in a two-state outcome, you probably have to finesse that. But what Jared has done, he's taken this and gone like that. He's tried to pull it in a totally different direction, and that is intentional because, and they're explicit about this, they want to reset the terms of reference. And in so doing, I think they may have put the final nail in the coffin of two states, because those terms of reference have now become Bantustans.
Apartheid, Bantustans.
I think when eventually the stories come out about who this was written by, this is an Israeli hand on the pen. And not just any Israeli hand. This is the hands of the more hardline elements inside Israel. Unbelievably, Ambassador David Friedman, who is the American former bankruptcy lawyer for President Trump, ambassador to Israel, now ambassador in Jerusalem, he was a donor as a private individual prior to taking up an official role. He was a donor to the settlements. I think he is a driving force behind that. And in his back room do not sit seasoned American diplomats, professionals, well-versed in this. In his back room, writing all his plans, are the settler movement. And he actually tweeted, "Thank you, Dr. Dori Gold, for all your input." Dori Gold, yes, is a former policy advisor, a former official working under Netanyahu. He runs a hardline institute in Jerusalem. And these are the kind of people who are running this show, writing these texts. And you can see it. There are just over 6 million Israeli Jews and about the same number, perhaps a little more, Palestinian Arabs in the areas controlled by Israel, inside Israel itself, in Jerusalem, in the occupied territories, in Gaza, which is still basically controlled by Israel, the airspace, the territorial waters, they go in and out. Israel could make peace with the United Arab Emirates tomorrow, and it wouldn't change the fact that they're on the land. And what this does, by essentially withdrawing the option of a two-state outcome, is it means Israel is left with the following choices. Rolling the dice that the Palestinians will forever accept an apartheid reality, or you have to expel the Palestinians if you want all the land, which I think is not inconceivable, but incredibly risky and ugly, and likely to generate a backlash.
And against international law, but I suppose that yeah, doesn't particularly...
Or you go through what is now being teed up, which is an anti-apartheid struggle where the Palestinians say, we can't now have a state. You've taken the option of a state, which was a huge concession for us. You've taken that off the table. Give us our equal rights in the one political space that you have created.
Which I think is now the general, it may not be the opinion amongst policymakers and think tanks and so on, that a one-state solution is the only way forward.
The bet that is being placed is that there is a generational divide that comes into play with this conflict as well. And the bet that's being placed is that those younger people do not care about this issue.
They've forgotten the atrocities.
They've forgotten, and it doesn't have the iconoclastic status that it used to have. I think that's a misplaced bet. Over time, is this one of the things that eventually leads us to hitting a tipping point? Very possibly. One of the things the peace process offered was not probably a path to peace, but a process that has been over a quarter of a century chugging along. It offered people a comfortable landing place.
Not comfortable, obviously, for the
not for
thousands
the Palestinians,
dying.
Not for the Palestinians.
Tens of thousands.
But it offered the international community an easy escape route to say, we have a peace process. Of course we're dealing with this issue. You strip that away. It's the emperor has no clothes. This is what Trump has done. Either you're with a colonial apartheid project or you're with actual freedom for the Palestinians. The question that Israel has dodged all these years of, is this apartheid you're creating? Are you ready to have a Palestinian state and end the occupation, or is this permanent inequality? That has been answered. And now the way to reverse that may not lie in two states. And now they will have to confront the question. Do we stick with the Trump apartheid plan, or do we do something that actually creates a different incentive structure for Israel? So that's why I think he sharpened the contradictions.
Daniel Levy, thank you.
That interview is from Avshin Ratansi's program called Going Underground, heard on Sputnik Radio, the current name for the Voice of Russia, available online at rt.com. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could make a donation for production costs of this unfunded program, I may be reached through the website and PayPal or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Almost all the funding this freely distributed program receives is from individual listener donations. Please, if you find this program beneficial, help support it. Through PayPal, you can create a monthly subscription to help cover my expenses. We will conclude with Radio Havana, Cuba. Last weekend in Venezuela, there was a terrorist attack on major telecommunication equipment. The Russian government has rejected U.S. threats to impose new sanctions on companies for cooperating with Venezuela in oil production. Exiled Bolivian President Evo Morales called for peace in the country. The U.S. Army is preparing to carry out its largest military drill in Europe in the past 25 years. A day of solidarity with Leonard Peltier was held in San Francisco. Radio Havana, Cuba.
The Venezuelan government denounced Sunday a terrorist attack on a warehouse of the National Telephone Company of Venezuela, CANTV, and its affiliate MobileNet in the northern state of Carabobo, causing total loss of strategic telecommunications equipment. Executive Vice President Delcy Rodriguez reported that the attack was perpetrated on Saturday night in the Flor Amarillo sector of Valencia, Carabobo State, causing a fire in the warehouse. Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro has ordered the immediate return of this indispensable material and the capture of those responsible, she added. Delcy Rodriguez went on to say the workers from both companies will present a recovery plan to the head of state in the face of violent waves of extremism pushed by the United States-backed opposition. Venezuela's Minister of Popular Power for Science and Technology, Gabriela Jimenez, said, "We reject the terrorist attack against the telecommunications services of Venezuela. Attacking CANTV and MobileNet is a war operation against our people." The Russian government has rejected U.S. threats to impose new sanctions against several Russian companies for their cooperation with Venezuela in the oil sector. The U.S. Special Representative for Venezuela, Elliot Abrams, recently warned Russia that its support for Venezuela will cost them economically. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov told reporters that, "We consider this practice as harmful. We believe that many countries suffer because of this practice, and we consider it contrary to international law." Peskov added that the United States, especially, and several other countries, unfortunately use this trade and other restrictions very frequently against third world countries, which are illegal under international law. They use this practice more and more often in recent times to ensure their own interests in international commercial and economic affairs.
The leader of the movement toward socialism, Evo Morales, has called for Bolivians to preserve peace and prevent violence in the Andean country. The existence of parliamentary or shock troops that attempt to prevent the integrity of Bolivians should not be tolerated, Morales wrote from his Twitter account. The former president of Bolivia pointed out that in the midst of the difficult situation taking place in the South American country after the coup d'etat in November, that it was time for reconciliation between the people of Bolivia. Similarly, the indigenous leader stressed that mass members and their political prisoners in Bolivia are innocent victims of this new dictatorship led by the coup against Morales. Evo said that on May the 3rd, when the new presidential elections will be held in Bolivia, the country's institutionality will be recovered with the conscience and vote of the Bolivian people.
The U.S. Army is preparing to carry out its largest military drills in Europe in the past 25 years. Observers noted that with the danger of a potential war between the United States and Iran, the USA insists on strengthening its military potential. A few days ago, it was announced that it had deployed, for the first time, a nuclear weapon, which could promote the use of this type of weapon in a conflict scenario. According to reports, the United States is in full preparation for a large-scale military exercise, which will involve 37,000 military personnel from 18 countries and approximately 20,000 soldiers. During the military exercise Defend Europe 2020, most of the forces will be deployed in February, but the main exercises will take place in April and May. However, some drills could last until the summer. These maneuvers, as well as associated exercises, will enhance strategic preparedness, according to the U.S. military, by training its ability to quickly move a large force of soldiers and equipment to Europe and to respond, along with its allies and partners, to a potential crisis.
Activists and allies with the Indigenous Liberation Movement have rallied to mark the International Day of Solidarity with Leonard Peltier, a Native American activist and political prisoner in the United States. He is also the 2020 vice presidential candidate, running with Gloria LaRiva of the Party for Socialism and Liberation. In San Francisco, California, organizers from the American Indian Movement West and the LaRiva Peltier presidential campaign erected the flag of AIM and the banner stating, 44 years is too long. Free Leonard Peltier now. Tony Gonzalez told the story of Geronimo, another heroic fighter for indigenous liberation, who was held as a prisoner of war by the U.S. military for 25 years until his death. Tony spoke about how the U.S. government imprisoned Geronimo in an attempt to prevent him from further organizing, and that they continue to imprison Leonard Peltier to this day for the same reason, explaining that the U.S. government knows he was not the shooter. He emphasized that this makes Leonard Peltier and Geronimo both political prisoners.
Those reports and opinion were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's web stream worked well this week at their website, radiohc.cu, but their podcast link did not. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140 and from 6 p.m. to midnight at either 6000, 6060, 6100, or 6165. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. You could use a shortwave radio at home. It's simpler than you might think, except for the fact that electronic devices create a lot of interference in the signal. If you use the internet, listening globally is easier and noise-free. See the links at this program's website. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can listen to past shows. Please consider making a safe donation online through PayPal. There's a link up at that website, along with a podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. This shortwave report, which is now in its 23rd year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. This shortwave report is produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.